Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everybody discusses Julian Assange. Is he a good guy or is he a bad guy? Does he treat his cat well or not? Is he skateboarding in the embassy or not? But what's really important for us as citizens is not how he treats his cat. It's, are the war criminals being prosecuted? But no one even discusses that anymore. And that's, you see, that's the purpose of this, that we all discuss about Julian Assange when actually it's about the governments, but no one discusses them anymore. And that's exactly what they want.
Välkomna till ett nytt avsnitt av podcasten Cyril och Stig. I otakt med samtiden. Podcasten produceras av Storyhood. Dagens gäst är Nils Meltzer från Schweiz. Han är FNs specialrapportör i fråga om tortyr, professor i internationell rätt i Genève och Glasgow samt vice föreståndare för internationella Institute of Humanitarian Law i San Remo i Italien. Tidigare har han också varit säkerhetspolitisk rådgivare till den schweiziska regeringen och juridisk rådgivare till internationella Röda korskommittén ICRC i olika krigs- och krigssituationer. Nu är han aktuell med boken Fallet Julian Assange, en historia om förföljelse utgiven av Karneval förlag, som handlar om hans tid som FNs rapportör i fråga om mänskliga rättigheter och tortyr, där han granskade fallet Julian Assange, som man kan säga ledde till att Assange friades från de svenska anklagelsepunkterna om våldtäkt och sexuella övergrepp. Då åklagarmyndigheten här i Sverige lade ner fallet ett halvår innan preskriptionstiden gick ut. Efter vår gäst kommer jag och Stig fortsätta att prata om den här boken och det här fallet. Glöm inte heller att swisha, för det är inte gratis att göra podd. Swisha nummer 123-535-4857. Jag repeterar, swish nummer 123-535-4857. Okay, we said welcome to Mr. Nils Meltzer, professor in international law in Genoa and Glasgow, and also special reporter on torture and human rights for United Nations. I will also say that after this, we will continue the podcast in Swedish.
Yes, in Swedish.
Okay, but you also understand. You understand a little bit Swedish because you have a Swedish mother, right?
Just det, jag pratar lite svenska.
Okay, but we do this in English.
Yes, I prefer to do that. Yeah.
Okay, okay. Julian Assange and his lawyer approach you from the beginning. But why did you take this case to go through in your work as a special reporter on torture and human rights?
Well, thank you for the question, because that really was an issue for me in the beginning. In December 2018, Julian Assange was still at the embassy, Ecuadorian embassy in London. His lawyers first contacted me and asked for my protection of my mandate, saying that his living condition in the Ecuadorian embassy amounted to cruel, inhuman and degrading treatment. And I immediately, almost instinctively, declined. I said, well, you know, this guy, isn't this rapist, this hacker, this traitor? He just wants to manipulate my mandate. I don't have time for this. And now you have to know, I receive about 10 to 15 requests per day by torture victims to intervene, and I can do one. So I have to decide quickly. But in his case, I noticed that I had this almost instinctive reaction, negative reaction. And his lawyers had to come back 3 months later. Briefly or shortly before he was expelled from the embassy, they said, we have rumors that he will be expelled. He will be sent to the United States. Please look at some of the evidence. They sent me some medical opinions by independent experts. And then I realized that perhaps I had just waved it off too quickly. And I decided to look into the case.
Yeah, I understand that you went through 10,000 pages of documents. But really soon, after a while, you changed your view of him. How come?
Actually, as soon as I started to open the books on this case, I realized that it's so politicized that I cannot find objective information, or I don't know what is the objective information. What the governments are saying, what the activists are saying, what his lawyers are saying. So I thought, I have to put all of this aside and I have to go and visit him myself, and to together with two doctors. So by the time I visited him, he was already arrested by the British. He was in Belmarsh prison. And about 4 weeks after his arrest, I visited him on the 9th of May 2019. I took a forensic doctor with me and I took a psychiatrist with me. Both of them are specialized in examining torture victims. And we spent 4 hours with him, examining him medically, and I talked also to him bilaterally. And all the three of us, independently from each other, came to the conclusion that he showed the typical symptoms of a person who has been exposed to psychological torture. Now, I did not expect to find this. I was actually shocked to find these medical symptoms, which are typical, neurological and cognitive damage already. And I knew he was a very intelligent man, so I was quite worried about those symptoms. And then I thought, well, where do these symptoms come from? Where has he been in the last 6 years? Well, in one room in the Ecuadorian embassy. So this has to be caused by his living conditions. And then I started really looking at this a bit more precisely, because it's easy to say, oh, the man lives, in an embassy with a cat and a skateboard, so it can't be so bad. But when you look at what he actually went through, then you see how perfidious this is, because he was under this constant threat that the U.S. was surveilling him, wanted him for espionage. The indictment was secret at the time. He was said to be paranoid. No, the U.S. will not prosecute you if you come out of the embassy. It's all fine. You just have to face justice for the Swedish allegations and so on. But lo and behold, the first step he took out of the embassy, he was actually arrested by the police, by the British, and the U.S. asked for his extradition. So he had been right all along.
But as you said, he's very intelligent. Maybe he is a good actor and fool you.
Well, I think, to be quite honest with you, I think the states are the better actors here because they really, they fooled me. Mm. I believe this narrative about him, and I'm mandated to be a special rapporteur on torture. I'm actually mandated and specialized in investigating human rights violations. And it took me two attempts to find out what is actually the truth here. So I started finding, when I opened the books, I looked at the evidence. The deeper I got into the case, the more dirt came out. And it was not on the side of Julian Assange, the dirt, but it was on the side of the states. And so in all four states that have been dealing with him for the last 10 years, and I'm speaking about the United States, about the United Kingdom, about Sweden and Ecuador. In all four jurisdictions, his rights have been systematically and gravely violated at every stage of every proceeding, and no one has ever corrected this mistake.
For the listener, as a journalist, Mr. Assange is protected by the Constitution, American Constitution, but because he helped this officer, Chelsea Manning, break her promise about top secret information in the USA, he could be tried as a spy. Is that accurate?
That's what the Americans are saying. But you see what Julian Assange has done. He has not hacked information. He has not stolen information. He has asked questions, and received information. But that's what journalists do. If you're a journalist and I'm a source, and you ask me questions, well, what do you know? What information can you give me? That's your job to do, no? If you're an investigative journalist. And the Americans are trying to criminalize that. If you ask too many questions about their national security, then you already are conspiring with your source to commit espionage. Even if you're not an American citizen, you have no duty of confidentiality. All you're trying to do is to investigate the truth. Even if what you want to know is information proving war crimes, which are most serious crimes in the world, even then you're supposed to be a spy, and you don't have a right to justify your acts when you're accused in court of espionage. There is no justification. As soon as you have disclosed secret information about national security, you are a spy and you will be sentenced, even if there is a public interest, because you have disclosed war crimes. So, and that's very worrying because it sets a precedent that the British are already following with their Official Secrets Act. And as you will know, in Sweden, we just recently had the government propose a law to Parliament about the utlandsspionerie, where it should become a crime to disclose information not that threatens national security, but only can be prejudicial to the relationships of Sweden with other countries. So what we see is worldwide a trend of secrecy, where governments try to protect their own acts and very often their own misconduct by protecting it through secrecy laws and criminalizing the disclosure of this evidence of the misconduct in their own criminal law. And that, I think, is very, very dangerous, because knowing the truth about what your government is doing with the power you give to them and the money you give to them, knowing the truth is your right. This, otherwise, there is no democracy if you don't have a right to know these things. So I feel that this case, and that's why it's so important to me, of Julian Assange, is a precedent case that is at a very important time in history, in this type of development.
Yeah, when I read it, I was quite stunned. I thought I was really shocked. And I was reading in the newspaper, Svenska Dagbladet, a review of your book by Stina Oskarsson. It was 2 weeks ago, something like that.
Yeah.
And it was, I very rarely read such alarming review. And she more or less said, you have to read this book because this is something very, very important. And I think, I wonder, why isn't other journalists so keen on talking about this? Is it the reason they are afraid of being on a rapist side because of this sexual thing? What do you think?
Yes, that certainly is part of it. In the US, it's maybe a little bit less about the rape allegations. It's more about having helped Trump to become president. All these accusations that are out there, I think it's very important, whether it's hacking, whether it's helping Trump, whether it's the rape allegations. None of these allegations have been proven. None of them. I mean, literally, there's no evidence for any of it. But it has been spread for more than 10 years. And people are just, reluctant to get involved in this. Also, I think because people sense that if they look into this case, it will change the view of reality. And then life becomes complicated because you will realize that you actually cannot trust your own authorities. And that's not a comfortable place to be.
No.
But also in Sweden, the Swedish political correct journalists adore an English or Australian journalist as John Pilger. And he's like a left journalist, international, big name. But he's on Assange's side.
And, to be honest, investigating also, rape is a form of torture. To me, this is one of the gravest crimes. So that was also one of the reasons why I didn't want to get
crime,
into the case.
Common war crime.
Exactly. So it's very important that these crimes are investigated. But what people don't know is that the Swedish authorities never wanted to really seriously investigate this. They wanted to use it to discredit Julian Assange.
And why do you think Swedish government?
Well, the context in 2010 when Julian Assange came to Sweden, and that's very important to know, he didn't come for a seminar. He gave a seminar, but he came to establish WikiLeaks in Sweden because he chose Sweden as the place that had the best protection for press freedom in the world. And he wanted to protect his future publications from the Americans. So that's why he came to Sweden to establish WikiLeaks here.
But Swedish Socialdemokraterna paid his plane ticket.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, one of the Broderskap Rörelsen, yeah. But I think we should be aware that the established political government at the time and their intelligence services and armed forces were very worried about the presence of WikiLeaks in Sweden. We have TV interviews. I think it was there is the Foreign Policy Institute that's quite close to the government. Even the head of the military intelligence at the time, they made press statements that they were considering WikiLeaks to be a danger for Sweden. And so I think we should be aware that the government must have been afraid of WikiLeaks getting established here. So they were interested to get them out. And I think it's important in this context. Now, we had this incident with those two women, and I think we have to be honest, even the prosecutor has never been able to bring any evidence. They had to drop the case after almost 10 years, not because the case expired and not because Julian Assange was evading justice, because he had been arrested at the time by the British, but they dropped the case because they didn't have evidence, enough to charge him of a crime. And so, but what we can see that during 10 years, the prosecutor has avoided coming to this point where they have to present their evidence. And they have pretended that it is Julian Assange who is running away, who is evading. But when you look at the facts, he repeatedly asked to be interviewed. He wanted to take position. He prolonged his stay in Sweden. And as long as he was here, he was not being interviewed by the prosecutor. So it really was a bad faith application of the law. And in my assessment is the results of my investigation that the authorities misused this proceeding in order to discredit him and to make sure he would leave Sweden and not establish WikiLeaks here.
Okay. You're right that in many of your cases where we can say no smoke without fire, ingen rök utan eld, as we say in Swedish.
Yes.
There is much fire, but not in this case. Can you develop that further?
Well, what we can see is that, it's pretended that, this is about, rape allegations and so on. But then you see, they haven't charged him really with any crime. They only want to question him with regard to that. And then he stays in Sweden for 5 weeks longer. He's not being questioned. He asks the prosecutor, if you don't want to question me, can I leave because I don't live in Sweden? Mm-hmm. She says, yes, there is no obstacle. You can leave. He stays another 2 weeks and then he leaves. And on the day he leaves, she issues an arrest warrant and a red notice later on with Interpol not for someone who is charged with a crime or convicted, but who only should be questioned. You don't issue a red notice, Interpol, for something like this. So this is a lot of smoke, for example, for a relatively small fire. And then you see, when he took refuge in the embassy of Ecuador in London because of the extradition to Sweden, it has to be made clear that he was prepared. He declared he was prepared to come to Sweden. He only wanted a guarantee that they will not send him to the U.S. Mm. And as someone who has worked for the Swiss Foreign Department and worked with international law all my life, these kinds of declarations are made all the time. If someone like Navalny was asking Sweden, I would like to visit Sweden, but can you guarantee you will not send me to Russia? Of course, the government would guarantee that. So they could have guaranteed, but they didn't want to. That made him suspicious. So he looked for protection in the embassy of Ecuador. And the British, and here comes a lot of smoke, they said, we will invade the embassy of Ecuador to arrest Julian Assange. Now, you don't do that because of someone who's not even charged of a crime, but should be questioned and who is prepared to be questioned through video link, through telephone. You don't invade a foreign embassy for that. You invade a foreign embassy when you have a hostage taking or a terrorist threat or someone who's really threatening national security. So this shows at what level of threat he was being assessed by the British. And also remember, there's no British woman involved in this case. The Swedish case was about Swedish women in Sweden. It's legitimate to investigate that, but you don't invade an embassy for that. The allegations are of a nature that any prosecutor knows they cannot prove it. Even if he did all they say they accuse him of, there is no way you can prove that forensically. A case like this, unfortunately, you'd simply have to drop, and they have tried to avoid this for as long as possible because it was very convenient. And just to prove that, even the British authorities wanted the Swedish to maintain the rape allegations for as long as possible. When the Swedish Supreme Court asked the prosecutor to finally either charge him or to drop the case, the prosecutor wanted to drop the case. But then the British send an email to the Swedish, don't you get cold feet? Don't stop this proceeding. Why would the British write that?
So judging by the way this case has been handled for the past 10 years, do you think there is a conspiracy between or hidden agenda agreement between USA, UK and Sweden?
I mean, conspiracy, I would use the word collusion, that you all those states have the same interests. They don't want WikiLeaks to be around because WikiLeaks is perceived as a threat. Because it creates a mechanism where whistleblowers can submit anonymously huge amounts of secret information for publication. And if that proliferates, if others do the same, it's very easy to do. Then you have 15,000 WikiLeaks in 5 years, and that's the end of secrecy. Mm. And I think that's what they were afraid of. And just, you know, the Swedish and the British just as much as the Americans. So that's why they cooperated together to corner Assange in this situation and to make it impossible for him to get out of that trap.
Mm. So do you think that Swedish prosecutor in Gothenburg, Marianne Ny, got secret orders from Swedish or U.S. government?
I don't know whether there were any orders. I can't speak to that because I haven't seen the evidence.
Because
of it.
What's strange, her way of many people in the Swedish government were annoyed by her, her way of handling this case. She refused to hear Assange in England, give him guarantees to not be given over to America, etc.
Well, what I can say is that at the very least, it was a very unprofessional way of doing things. And she is too experienced to do this by accident. Mm. You see, this is what I want to say. It's if you have a junior prosecutor making mistakes, it can happen. They're not experienced enough. They make mistakes. It's a politicized case, so there may be a little bit tense. But she was a very experienced superior prosecutor, so it's, you know, supposedly she knew what she was doing. So if you have a world famous person in your country who's a foreigner who's being accused of something as sensitive as rape, you will have to question him immediately. Mm-hmm. You cannot wait for a week or for 2 weeks, in this case 6 weeks after the alleged crime, until she first wanted to invest to hear him, and that he has to contact her and say, "Can I please be questioned? Because I would like to leave the country at some point." And she says, "Yeah, not just now, because the police officer is sick. This is not serious." No. You see, and then there is a mutual legal assistance agreement with London. When he was in London, they have in dozens of cases. Prosecutors have gone to London or British have come to Sweden to investigate cases. So you can do that. And she claimed in the press that it was illegal for her to question Julian Assange in London. And that was clearly false. And she must have known that. And then 5 years later, she finally went to, or not she, but her deputy went to London to actually question
Assange.
That was
after the Swedish parliament had been on her.
Yeah, but so it wasn't illegal after all. So what you can see is that they have created this impression in the public like Julian Assange has evaded justice. And he actually wanted to come back. But he said, look, I'm afraid Sweden has extradited people to the U.S. without a legal proceeding before, the infamous Egyptian cases. Mm-hmm. And can you please guarantee you won't do that? But they said, oh, you know, we can't guarantee that. It's for a court to decide for your extradition. But it's not true. Yes, you have a court proceeding, but the final decision on extradition is always a political prerogative of the government in Sweden, in the UK, in the US. Yes, they could have guaranteed, but they didn't want to. And so I understand, I think he was right to be worried. Yeah. You know, what's going on here? So she's lying about the law. You know, she didn't want to question me when I was in Sweden. Then when he left Sweden, his luggage disappeared.
Yeah, that was very strange.
And only his luggage on a direct flight between Stockholm and Berlin. And the system showed that it disappeared in Stockholm.
Yeah.
And it was never found.
They always find you use case my hour delayed my luggage.
So when you accumulate all of these little factors, then you also see that the evidence has been manipulated by, we know now that, you know, a lot of text messages that had been sent by those women that show a different situation. But they were not being given to the public or even to the lawyers by the prosecutor. They were being suppressed and declared secret, classified as secret information, when it was crucial information to show the truth of the situation. And I think that's really when you accumulate all of this and you see, well, they're manipulating evidence, they're suppressing evidence that could be positive for Julian Assange. And
here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The rest, they're pushing to the press, even though Swedish secrecy law doesn't allow to inform the press about the name of a suspect, and the name of one of the women was leaked to the press also by the authorities, not by Assange. Mm-hmm. And then the women were exposed to this pressure by the press, and they were, stressed and traumatized by this. But this was because the authorities had made it possible to identify them. And that's illegal in Sweden. Mm. But somehow it's being presented that this is all about Julian hiding from justice. Yeah. And that's, I think, is really something that we have to be aware of. And the same pattern is followed by the U.S. when it's about hacking, or the DNC leaks that exposed the corruption in the Democratic Party that then may have supported the Trump election. But to be honest, those emails that were published were not written by Julian Assange. They were written by Hillary Clinton and her people in the Democratic Party. So if this information, if people think, well, this is corrupt, I don't want to elect her, maybe the public should have known. Mm-hmm. So what's, it's really the job of a journalist to inform the public about misconduct of the authorities. If the authorities then lose political power, well, so be it. That's the point, right? Then it's really a question of understanding what the role of the public, of the press is as a fourth estate. The press is not here to entertain people; it is here to empower people.
Mm. And but if you compare it with the early 70s and this Watergate thing, what is the difference between then and now? Something has happened.
Yes, in the 70s we had Watergate, we had the Pentagon Papers. The U.S. government tried already then to prosecute Daniel Ellsberg, the whistleblower, and to prosecute even the New York Times. Yeah. And there we had a precedent case by the Supreme Court saying, no, this is press freedom. I think since then we have developed in the wrong direction. I think one of the big problems is that 9/11 was a big shock. And that especially Western states have started to loosen their checks and balances in order to facilitate counterterrorism. And I understand the motivation. But the problem is, the intelligence services and the police are like watchdogs, guard dogs. You want them to bark at everybody. Even the postman, when he comes, well, it's better to bark at him than not to bark at the criminal, right? So, but the problem is, when you have a watchdog that barks at everybody, you have to have a leash. And what we have done, we have let the intelligence services off the leash, and then they start abusing their power.
And for the listener, we must say that what WikiLeaks did mainly to change the opinion about the war in Iraq was this video.
Collateral murder video.
Yeah. It and if you compare to Vietnam War, it was like this in Saigon with this picture from
when they shot a small girl in the head.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, the collateral murder video, clearly, yes. I mean, I've been analyzing military operations for 20 years. I've worked in war areas for the Red Cross for 12 years. It is clearly a war crime that's being committed on camera.
Yeah.
And I say that the war crime...
Journalists from Reuters are being...
Yes, yeah. Yes. But especially what we can see is that wounded people that have been wounded by the first attack are being deliberately killed when someone tries to rescue them. So the rescuers and the wounded people are being killed. And this is an absolutely prohibited, you know, this is a war crime.
Yeah.
There's no discussion about this. And what we can see is that it's not the only war crime that WikiLeaks has proven, but it's the most kind of, shocking because we have the video material. But none of these crimes that have been exposed by WikiLeaks has been prosecuted. None of them. So the governments know they have evidence of serious crimes. We're talking about murder and not bail violation, murder. And it's not being prosecuted. But then they prosecute all those people who have given the evidence for those crimes. So Chelsea Manning, the soldier who gave the information to the WikiLeaks, Assange is being, even for the CIA torture, the only CIA agent who has ever been prosecuted is John Kiriakou, who's the one who informed on television about the program, the whistleblower. So it's always the whistleblowers and the journalists who give the evidence for the crime. The witness for the crime is being prosecuted, but the criminal not. And that is, I think...
It's against the Constitution.
Yes, it's against every principle of justice.
Yeah, yeah.
And what this means is that the criminals become justified and they think that they're entitled to protection by the law. We had just recently the scoop in the Yahoo article where an investigative journalist team interviewed, I think, 30 CIA agents, previous ones, and they confirmed that there had been discussions of kidnapping and even assassinating Assange in the CIA in 2017. And then Mike Pompeo, who used to be the CIA director at the time, in an interview said that these people should be prosecuted for disclosing this secret information. But it didn't occur to him that these people actually informed about a plan to murder someone. I mean, how can you prosecute? You know, this is considered to be completely normal today, that you prosecute the people who give information on a crime, but not the criminals. And that's something I think that to me shows that what's happening, that it becomes a crime to tell the truth. And I don't want to, you know, leave a world to my children where it has become a crime to tell the truth.
And regarding your work for the United Nations, Sweden's government refused to say they transgressed international human rights because Assange was staying in Ecuador's embassy by his own free will. What do you say about that?
Well, any political refugee, is a voluntary in his asylum because he wants protection. Obviously, he wanted to go into the embassy. But the question is not whether someone is in his asylum of his own free will. The question is what will happen to him if he leaves. That's in asylum. That's why someone is in. That's the essence of asylum, that if you leave it, you are in danger. So if you look at this situation, Julian Assange always said, as soon as I leave the embassy, I will be arrested and the U.S. will ask for my extradition. Everybody laughed at him and said, oh, this is paranoid. And no, the Obama administration has said they will not prosecute you. Well, lo and behold, he left the embassy when he was arrested. And in that hour, the U.S. submitted their extradition request. And he has not left the high security prison of Belmarsh since then. And I think that's very, very important that he has been right all along.
Why don't you think England gave him the same treatment as they did, that they gave Pinochet from Chile, that they gave him a nice house arrest in the nice part of London?
Exactly. Very important. General Pinochet at the time was in the same legal situation as Assange because Switzerland, Belgium and France, I believe, wanted him extradited.
Yeah.
For crimes against humanity, for a real crime.
Yeah, and then with 30,000 people killed in
Chile. Not for journalism, but for for serious crimes. But he was being, you know, accommodated in a villa and
drinking tea with Thatcher.
Yeah, exactly. Previous Prime Minister Thatcher visited him and brought him whiskey and so on. Previous Prime Minister Blair has not visited Julian Assange in prison. And I know, I don't mean this as a joke. It's very serious. I mean, he's being held. He's not serving a sentence. He is just being held so he doesn't escape in case he will be extradited to the U.S. at the end of the proceeding. But he could be in house arrest. But if he were in house arrest, what would he do? He could exercise his profession. He could have access to internet. He could do all the things he would normally do, which are perfectly legal things to do. He could have a family life. But this is not what they want. They want to isolate him. They want to silence him. And they want to set the precedent, you know, intimidating other journalists. For example, you're in the, you know, journalist business. Yeah. So if I ask you, if I gave you today a USB stick with the collateral murder video number 2 and 250,000 diplomatic cables and, you know, the Iraq war files, maybe now it'd be something else, a different context, would you publish it?
I don't know. I have my son is an American citizen, so I have a long run visa, but I don't think it will work.
Is it fair to say that you would think a long time about it?
Mm. Yeah, I would think
because of what has been done to Assange.
Of course, I would consider.
Because now you would look at what happens to, you know, you look at the Assange case. Well, you don't know whether he will be extradited to the U.S., but you know you will be spending 10 years somewhere in a prison.
Yeah. I think you could compare it with Russia. You can always think, why did Russia use polonium and these kind of poisons that is pointing right at them? Yeah. But it is because they want to frighten people. Yes. Don't be another Navalny.
Yes.
We kill you. It's the same thing.
Of course, it's very deliberate. What they're doing is they're violating his rights openly, in broad daylight, everybody to see, systematically, because what they're showing is we can. If you ever do what he has done, look what we will do. We will violate your rights every day, at every stage of the proceeding, in open daylight, and nobody will come to protect you.
And what is happening right now with Assange?
Well, he is now in the extradition proceeding to the U.S. in the appeal stage at the High Court. You will remember that in January, the first instance court refused his extradition, and it was celebrated as a victory. But it's something that is very tricky because what the judge did, first of all, she confirmed all of the legal reasoning of the U.S. She said, yes, it's what he has done is a crime. It's espionage. You know, it's not a political offense. And all of the arguments of press freedom and surveillance and human rights, she discarded. And so she gave the U.S. what they wanted, but in the end said, but we cannot extradite Julian Assange because of his mental state of health and because he would not be able to sustain the prison conditions in the U.S. and he would commit suicide. Now, but that's not a victory because, you see, in law, if she had extradited him, he would have appealed to the higher court and brought all those questions of press freedom and human rights to the higher court. But now the U.S. has appealed and they only said, actually, his state of health is not that bad. And if it is, we will give guarantees that we will treat him well. So these are factors that they can control. You see, now the U.S. has full control of the trial. They can say, they can guarantee, promise, we will treat him well. So what can the British say now? No. We don't believe you? No, they can't say that. So clearly, it's very easy for the British now to extradite him because they only have to believe those guarantees. Or maybe they're even smarter than that and they say, well, yes, that's very nice, but your guarantees are not quite sufficient. So we will not extradite him. So they can appeal to the Supreme Court and give even broader guarantees. But it's made it very easy for the U.S. now to control the factors. They don't have to argue war crimes, you know, human rights violations, press freedom. They only have to discuss about which guarantees they give for his treatment. Mm-hmm. And this is really what we see happening now. I'm quite afraid. What we also see is that 10 days before the hearing, one of the judges was replaced. Yeah. And they took a lady judge out and they put the Chief Justice of England and Wales in charge, Lord Burnett. And he has three years ago, he has written a judgment on a different person, Laurie Love, who was a hacker, a British hacker, who the U.S. wanted extradited, and he refused extradition for the same reasons. He said, this person has a slight autistic Asperger's syndrome, and he would not support and sustain the prison conditions in the U.S. Now, they put the same judge in charge. In the British system, this means that he might change the precedent. If you don't want to change the precedent, you put a junior judge in charge and he just applies the precedent of Laurie Love. But it's maybe a little bit technical for non-lawyers, but I think it's not a good sign. Mm-hmm. They might want to change the precedent. My fear is that they will extradite him based on diplomatic assurances that they will treat him well.
Mm. You write that Assange is a victim of, in the Swedish edition, it said, statlig instrumentalisering. I think you have written in English then governmental instrumentalization. I don't know exactly what you mean with that. What do you mean?
I mean, if we're speaking about the Swedish case, I think that both Assange and the two women that we're talking about have been instrumentalized. They have been used, exploited by the political authorities for political purposes. Yeah. So it was not about investigating rape. It was really about using this allegation and maintaining it at a certain level in the consciousness of people for as long as possible. You can also see that, this proceeding was closed about 3 days after it was opened in the beginning. Mm. It was opened by one prosecutor, then the chief prosecutor comes in and says, no, this is no crime. We will close the proceeding. Then it was reopened by the Överåklagare. And then it was maintained until 2017. It was closed again a second time. And then it was reopened immediately after he was arrested. He came out of the prison. The public was interested in him again. Mm. So they reopened the proceeding to say, oh, he's still a rapist. Mm. You see, so this was very important to keep people at a distance from him, not to engage with him, not to look behind the curtain of what's actually happening in this case. And it's always about him trying to evade justice. And with this, they could cover up what's actually happening and especially divert attention from, the Julian Assange case really is not about Julian Assange. It's about the states and what has been exposed about their misconduct. But everybody discusses Julian Assange. Is he a good guy or is he a bad guy? Does he treat his cat well or not? Is he skateboarding in the embassy or not? But what's really important for us as citizens is not how he treats his cat. It's, are the war criminals being prosecuted? But no one even discusses that anymore. And that's the purpose of this, that we all discuss about Julian Assange when actually it's about the governments, but no one discusses them anymore. And that's exactly what they want.
And you had with your report, there were 50 issues or something you had to the Swedish government. But just 2 weeks after you were finished, they laid down this case. So yes. One can say they freed Assange. Why do you think they were afraid of an investigation?
Well, I think it's a reasonable argument to think I intervened with the Swedish government in May after having visited Julian Assange because I felt that their treatment of the case had contributed to his ill treatment and persecution. The Swedish government at the time said, we cannot investigate this because we are the government, the foreign ministry. I always have to go through the foreign minister. That's my contact person in the UN member state. But this case is pending with the prosecutor, and they're independent in Sweden, so we cannot investigate. Now, that's a bogus argument, because in every state where I intervene with the foreign minister because he's my person of contact.
Yeah, you're right there.
But the foreign minister never tortures people. It's always the prosecutors and the courts and, the police. So they just didn't want to answer. And so I wrote a second letter and said, look, here are 50 questions. Please clarify point by point why you think this was correct, the way the authorities behaved. Now, I deal with 193 states, and I know from experience that when states have good answers, they are keen to explain to you why they their behavior was lawful. I got a one-page response by Sweden. Mm. We said, we have no further observations, no comment, basically. Yeah. And that usually means that they have something to hide.
That's a bad sign, yeah.
Yeah. And then 6 days later, they closed the proceeding, which was convenient because my letter was being published by the United Nations. So journalists could pick up those 50 questions and ask the government. But now they could say, oh, the case is closed. It's everything classified. We cannot talk about it anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have any more questions?
No.
Okay. The title in English...
In English, it's the trial of Julian Assange. The English version.
You have the German title here, Stig.
The German title is Der Fall Julian Assange.
In English, it will be The Trial of Julian Assange, a story of persecution, and it will be published in February with Verso Books.
Okay. Yeah. And in Sweden, it's called Fallet Julian Assange, en historia om förföljelse, utgiven av Karneval förlag. Mm. Okay. Then we thank you for coming and visit us.
Ja, tack så mycket.
Okay. Ja, nu har vi suttit här med Nils Meltzer, en väldigt framstående jurist, framförallt på den internationella banan, och liksom professor i både brittiska kungadömet och Schweiz. Parlamentarismen och juridikens hemländer, kan man väl säga. Och FN-observatör. Och han är ju då övertygad om Assange då, det här fallet, hur att det har behandlats väldigt illa, rättsröta och alla möjliga saker då.
Ja, för mig var det ju, när jag läste boken nu i helgen, så blev jag verkligen chockad över det jag läste. Och jag tycker att det är konstigt att inte, nu när han kommer till Sverige, att inte har blivit mer uppmärksamma. Att inte de stora tidningarna och Rapport och Aktuellt och sådär, TV4-nyheterna, tar upp det här. För att det som har hänt med Assange är ju en chock för alla som är journalister, alla som arbetar för att ta fram saker som är oegentliga. Det får ju sådana konsekvenser för världens framtid när man kan behandla sådant som man har gjort.
Ja, de enda alltså som har skrivit, idag är det den onsdagen den 17 november, de enda som har skrivit om den här boken idag är Stina Oskarsson, Åsa Lindeborg, som man väl då kan säga av de traditionella vänsterjournalisterna ses som förrädare och börjar bli lite deplattformerade, eller man ska säga. Det är de enda som har vågat tagit upp.
Ja, men det finns en form av beröringskräck direkt. Om någon är anklagad för våldtäkt, så är den personen persona non grata, även om det är sant eller inte sant. Och det visar ju då var vi har hamnat rent juridiskt i Sverige. Men alltså, jag menar nog att en annan bieffekt av det här är att man ser vad sanning innebär. För när du läser den här boken så tänker man så här, för Meltzer är mycket skicklig, intelligent, han är ju liksom jurist.
Mm, och liksom, världsstjärna på den marknaden.
Och liksom löser upp fallet i små beståndsdelar. Och då ser man, och det är det som är fördelen med sanning, och fördelen med journalistik och fördelen med juridik, det är att det står liksom utan någon som helst tvekan att här har begåtts ett fel. Och det går inte att komma runt det. Alltså,
det är massor med fel som inte får begås. Mm. Nej, men åklagaren läcker till media att det är Assange innan något åtal, att det är han som är den, sitter häktad. Han ger också, som Nils Meltzer berättar, så kvinnorna, menar ju Meltzer, är de riktigt stora offren här också.
Ja, man kan inte jämföra det med Assange. Han är väl ändå det största offret. Om man lämnar det där, alltså rädslan för att befinna sig i en totalitär stat. Frågan är, man måste redan nu börja uppleva sig som att man gör det. Jag tänker på när Ryssland förgiftar människor med polonium. Då kan man tycka, men borde de inte använda ett annat gift som inte just visar att det är en stat som Ryssland som ligger bakom det. Polonium är väldigt sällsynt och väldigt svårt att hantera. Men det är därför att Ryssland vill att det ska märkas att det är de som har gjort det. På samma sätt som den här MBS, Mohammed bin Salman i Saudiarabien, när det gäller den här Khashoggi. Alltså, de är inte rädda för att bli anklagade för mord.
Ja, bulgariska säkerhetstjänsten stack folk med paraply.
Jag vet. Men alltså det är därför att de vill att vi ska vara rädda. De säger så här, okej, om du gör det här, då kommer vi att krossa dig både psykiskt och fysiskt, som det här fallet med Assange. Och ingen kommer att höja sin röst emot det. När staten vill att vi ska vara rädda för dem, så har de säkert en anledning till det. Jag fattar varför USA tycker illa om det här med WikiLeaks. Det skulle vilken stat som helst göra. Men att de kan agera på samma sätt som skurkregimer, det är ju någonting som gör att man måste tänka sig att förändra sin syn på den amerikanska staten.
Okej, och ni glöm inte att podd inte är gratis, så swisha gärna till 123-535-4857. Swishnummer 123-535-4857. Jag och Stig kommer också att ha ett nytt föredrag den här gången om litteratur. Så förra gången blev det mest film på Rosa drömmar i mitten av januari. Så håll utkik på våra sociala medier om det. Vi heter Cyril och Stig på Facebook. I otakt med samtiden på Instagram. Jag är också aktuell med boken Lilla Chicago, skriven tillsammans med Ali Khalil, en roman om gängkrigen i Göteborg, och intervjuboken Stefan Jarl 2005-2021. Vår producent Theodor Lundgren är aktuell med boken Där jag kommer ifrån tillsammans med skådespelaren och kampsportaren Dragomir Gago Mirsik.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.